You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hi, everyone. It's Stu here, your dulcet-toned podcast host. Are you tired of ads interrupting your favourite true crime podcast? British Murders, of course. I mean, who needs a 60-second detour when you're in the midst of an immensely well-told story? The irony of this being an ad isn't lost on me, but I wanted to let you know that you can listen to British Murders completely ad-free by signing up for a Patreon membership. For as little as £3 per month, you'll get early access to ad-free episodes, as well as a heap of other benefits. I've got a fair few bonus episodes you can sink your teeth into, and every Monday I drop a new episode of the British Murders Weekly Journal. If you enjoy exclusive giveaways, my Patreon has those too. Head to patreon.com/British Murders and choose either my OBE or KBE/DBE tier to rid yourself of those pesky adverts. Plus, you'll be helping support your favourite podcast so that I can offer you even more content going forward. I'd say that I'll shut up now, but you've got the rest of the episode to listen to. Back to you, Stu.
This podcast contains elements that may be alarming to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
You are now listening to British Murders, the True Crime Podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to British Murders, the podcast focusing exclusively on listener-suggested British murder cases. I'm your host Stuart Blues and this is the fourth episode of season 13. Before we get into the story, let's break that ice. The show's first opening icebreaker segment is this.
True facts that sound like bullshit.
Did you know that no number written as a word before 1000 contains the letter A? Immediately, I thought that was nonsense when I read it, because the word and obviously has an A in it, you know, 999, for example. I'm sure there's some earlier than that. But I guess the idea is you can only write the numbers and not the conjunction. Now it's time for the show's final opening icebreaker segment.
Random quote of the day.
Acting is a masochistic form of exhibitionism. It is not quite the occupation of an adult. That was said by Laurence Olivier. This case was requested by Sarah via the contact page on BritishMurders.com. We're in the town of Letchworth Garden City this week, or Letchworth as it's more commonly known, which is located in the east of England county of Hertfordshire. It's located 11 miles northeast of Luton, 23 miles northeast of Watford, and 33 miles north of London. Here are a few quickfire facts about Letchworth. Number 1. Letchworth was founded by Sir Ebenezer Howard as his first design for a garden city, within which he tried to combine the best of both town and country living. Number 2. As the first garden city in the world, its neatly planned streets, attractive cottage housing and wide green spaces offered an alternative to the squalor of urban life in early 20th century Britain. Number 3, the first roundabout in the UK was built in Letchworth. Located on the Broadway and built in 1909, it's cited as the nation's first ever gyratory traffic flow system. Number 4, Letchworth has been well known for its large number of rare black squirrels since 1912. British black squirrels are apparently a mutant produced by two grey squirrels mating, according to Hertfordshire Live, and are said to be far more aggressive. And number 5, the 2013 film The World's End, starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, was filmed partly in Letchworth, with several premises being used to portray the pubs in the film. According to the 2021 census, the estimated population of Letchworth was 33,990. Nicola Collingbourne, known more commonly as Nicky, was born in 1990 and dedicated her life to helping others. As a carer, she earned her way by working with kids and looking after them, something she took to like a duck to water. One of her dreams was to become a mother and have kids of her own, but sadly, she would not get the opportunity to experience the joys of parenthood. There were children in the family, though, each of whom adored Nikki, so she at least had the chance to make many happy memories with them. Nikki's caring nature extended to looking after her mum, who at the time of this story's events was going through some issues that greatly affected her health. Her mum, Rena, had a severe respiratory disease, the precise nature of which I'm not privy to, which meant she had regular appointments at Lister Hospital, located around 3 miles from Nikki's home at Ival Court. Nikki would take her mum to and from the appointments, acting essentially as her driver, because she would always do the utmost to help out those in need, especially if they were family. Her selfless and caring nature was such a huge asset to her family, who looked up to her with great affection as a result. Not much meant more to Nikki than her family. They depended on her, and she was happy to oblige with anything they asked of her. As a person, Nikki has been described by those who knew her as being a beautiful woman, both inside and out, who brought a smile to the face of everyone she interacted with. She had an innate ability to bring joy and laughter to those who needed it most, and was always on hand to offer a shoulder to cry on or a listening ear when someone needed to unburden their worries. Seeing people smile would in turn bring one to Nikki's face, and it goes without saying that she would have made a fantastic mum given how much of a natural she was when it came to looking after and being with children. To grow her own family with a husband was something she so looked forward to, and with her loving family at her side, who knows what she could have gone on to achieve. I watched an episode of Killer in My Village whilst researching this case because episode 10 of season 6 covers Nikki's story. Her nieces, Jodie and Leanne, took part in the documentary and joked about how they were more like sisters, especially because Jodie was actually older than Nikki. They would regularly go away together, sometimes with the kids, sometimes without, and thoroughly enjoyed spending time with each other. Another member of Nikki's family was Yvonne Kaler, who was 52 years old at the time of this story's events. Kaler was Nikki's half-sister, they had the same dad, and has been described as being sort of the family outcast, owing to her spending most of her adult life across the Atlantic in America. She'd become estranged as a result, and missed out on all the family gatherings that Nikki had experienced and thrived in. Moving to the USA in the early 90s, Kayla will have been in her late 20s, whereas the much younger Nikki will have been just 2 or 3 years old at the time. Kayla worked as a welder over there and would eventually meet an American man whom she'd go on to marry. Growing up knowing she had a sister that she likely didn't remember, Nikki wanted to try and make things right by getting to know her. Family was a priority, as I said before, so she wanted to go out of her way to ensure Kayla had more of a presence in her life. To do this, Nikki opted to travel to America and moved in with Kayla in roughly September 2011, living there for almost a year before returning to the UK in August 2012. What at first likely started as a lovely experience, two sisters getting to know each other after being separated for over 2 decades, the positivity doesn't appear to have lasted. Nikki's family have described Kayla as being a rather hot-headed person who said what she meant and meant what she said. It wouldn't be out of the question for her to become physical if she deemed it necessary to stress her point, let's put it that way. Her personality on paper appears to have been the complete opposite of Nikki's, and despite the saying being that opposites attract, in their case, it didn't. The half-sisters fell out big time in the autumn of 2012, which ultimately led to Nikki returning to the UK. There are some who speculate that Kayla was jealous over Nikki's relationship with their father, given she grew up with him in her life whilst Kayla was over in America. Nikki also had the seemingly perfect family life with those she loved dearest close to her at all times, which again, Kayla didn't. In around June 2015, Kayla visited the UK, with one source claiming she did so after hurting her back whilst working as a welder, which led to Nikki offering her a place to stay at her flat. Kayla's sudden appearance in the UK baffled the rest of the family, and a few reservations were held about her staying with Nikki. Even so, Nikki allowed Kayla to stay at hers not only to repay the favour that was extended to her while she was in America, but because she was a giver by nature and deemed it the right thing to do. Now, it's possible the pair first lived at another address, the home of Nicky's late grandma, before moving to flat 16 at Ivell Court, but regardless, the main point is that living together once more didn't do much to improve their already tumultuous relationship. After 4 months, Nicky had had enough of Kayla and made the difficult decision to evict her. It can't have been easy, given they were family, and Nicky would always typically give anything to ensure the happiness of others, but things had deteriorated to such a level that she could no longer continue with those living arrangements. Saturday, October 3rd, 2015 was the evening in which the half-sisters had another huge row, just like they'd had in America, and it was on that night Kayla left the flat. Frustrated and wanting to get her own back, Kayla called the police and insisted that Nicky had physically assaulted her, something which led to the latter's arrest. As police officers interviewed Nicky in the very early hours of the next day, it was not long after midnight, she insisted that Kayla had greatly exaggerated the argument they'd had and felt she was getting revenge for having been kicked out. She explained that the argument culminated with Kayla violently throwing Nicky's iPad on the floor, destroying it. The police interview, which was video recorded and would later be used as evidence in the murder trial, saw Nicky say the following. "I was trying to keep calm. It became worse and worse. She was just lashing out with her fists. She was pinning me against a wall, saying, 'I am going to kill you.' I took her stuff to the front door. She got a mop. She said, 'I'm going to ram this down your throat.' It fell on the floor. She picked up my iPad and threw it on the floor. She grabbed her laptop and walked out. I got her out and slammed the door. She was beating on the door trying to get back in." Nicky insisted the aggressor was not her, but Kayla, who she said grabbed her by the throat at one point. She added, "I had no intention to hurt her. I have never intended to." That testimony appeared to go directly against the statement Kayla had provided, which indicated that Nicky would often become violent and aggressive whenever she lost her temper. Nicky had, according to Kayla, become hostile after failing to find her medicine, grabbing the latter's hair in the process and pushing her forcefully against a wall. Denying those accusations, Nicky said, "I am telling nothing but the truth." After being questioned, Nicky was released on bail that afternoon, but when she got home, she was greeted with a disastrous sight. Her flat appeared to have been burgled while she was in custody, which, if unconnected to Kayla, would have been one hell of a coincidence. There was damage to her doorframe, indicating forced entry, and a fair few of her possessions had been stolen. Her suspicion immediately fell on Kayla, given the previous night's events, and suspected her of having done damage to the property in a vain attempt of covering up what she'd done. A couple of days later, Nicky formally complained to the police and directly accused Kayla as being the person responsible. In complete disbelief at what had gone on, Nicky said in a statement, "I have helped Yvonne, and she has done this to me." Kayla was then arrested and questioned about the incident, but denied any involvement. The evidence gathered by the police contradicted her pleas of innocence, however, as they managed to find a connection between her and a local locksmith. Barry Crosby was subsequently questioned by police and revealed that a woman had got in touch with him, he's the locksmith, about being unable to gain access to her flat. Attending the property, he forced the door open at her request. Mr. Crosby would later pick Kayla out from an identity parade 2 months later. More evidence came to light when Nicky's mum, Rena, told the police that on the same day her daughter complained about being burgled, October 6th, she received a call from Kayla asking her to lie about who the rightful owner of some of the stolen property was. Subsequent investigations confirmed Kayla had made that call, although she would deny having done so. Released on bail, Kayla was required not to make contact with Nicky, as per her release conditions, but she breached that in November 2015 when she called her half-sister asking her if she could speak to her. Nicky swiftly hung up as soon as she realised who was on the other end of the line and quickly reported the breach to the police. Kayla's denial of each of the aforementioned incidents did nothing to stop her from being charged with burglary and attempting to pervert the course of justice on January 8th, 2016. She went on to formally plead not guilty to both charges at Cambridge Crown Court on April 8, 2016, which meant her case was placed on an 8-week warned list. A warned list is used by a Crown Court as a list of backup cases that can be called for hearing at any time during a set period if another trial can't go ahead. Basically, she had an impending trial to look forward to, commencing in the 8 weeks starting from May 23rd. Beyond worried about Kayla being free until her trial, Nikki often resorted to barricading herself inside her flat, just in case she received an unexpected visit from her disgruntled half-sister. In a WhatsApp message sent by Nikki to Jodie, she attached a photo of her barricaded door and said, "This is how I have to live, but hope it works if she does try to break in." When May 23rd came around, Nikki likely had some mixed emotions. The door was suddenly open regarding Kayla's case being heard in a court, but at the same time, her mum was really struggling with her health. Nikki took Rena to an appointment at Lister Hospital that day, with the plan being to return and pick her up a little while later. As I said earlier, running people around, especially a mum, was something Nikki did so frequently, and she was far from tardy. So when she suddenly failed to collect her mum from the hospital as agreed, it raised more than a few eyebrows. The last thing Nikki ever wanted to do was let people down, so when Jodie received a call from Rena, who informed her Nikki never picked her up, she became immediately concerned. Nikki wasn't answering her phone or replying to messages, another thing that was so unlike her, which left Jodie with no other choice but to attend her flat and check on her in person. In the episode of Killer in My Village, Jodie explains how Nikki would sometimes become inconsolably upset when the sudden realisation that her mum might not be around for much longer dawned on her. In such instances, the best thing to do was to give Nikki some space and leave her be, which is exactly what Jodie did. Leaving the flat, she hoped Nikki would be contactable the following day, but she wasn't. More calls and messages went unanswered, and with that, Jodie went to the flat with a couple of other family members that evening, one of whom had a spare key. What greeted them on the other side of the door was a sight that will no doubt stick in their memories forever.
The story will continue after these quick messages.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
And now, back to the story.
Lying on her back in a pool of what appeared to be her own blood was the motionless body of Nikki Collingbourne. Wearing only her underwear and with a bath towel carelessly discarded on the floor in the nearby hall, it appeared as though Nikki had perhaps just got out of the shower or bath. As the women dialed 999, a closer inspection of Nikki revealed that her wrists had been slashed, opening them up to the potential idea that she'd taken her own life. The paramedics and police soon arrived, with the latter cordoning off the surrounding area, while statements were given by her devastated family members. Examining the crime scene, forensics recovered several shattered pieces of what was formerly a ceramic casserole dish in the shape of a chicken. The broken pieces appeared to have been swept together in a half-hearted attempt at cleaning up the mess. To add further mystery to the scene, a brush was being held by Nikki in her right hand, the sort of which comes paired with a dustpan. The implication was that Nikki had begun sweeping up the mess but hadn't finished the job. Further questions were raised given both of her wrists were slashed despite her having the brush in one of her hands. It lacked any kind of sense for her to have begun sweeping up, slashed her wrists, and then picked up the brush once more. Something was off about the scene, but until further examinations, the police's first thought was that this was a suicide case. It wasn't until Nikki's post-mortem that foul play at the hands of a third party was suspected. There was a 4-centimetre-long cut on the back of Nikki's head, with a couple of others running in the same direction on the back of her neck. Examination of her skull revealed it had been fractured, although whether the injury was sufficient to kill her could not be confirmed, nor could her precise cause of death. The results came back inconclusive, but the two pathologists who conducted Nikki's postmortem were confident that hers was an unusual and unnatural death that was caused by someone else. They didn't rule out the possibility of the casserole dish being used as a weapon having potentially been forcefully brought down on the back of Nikki's head by an attacker using both of their hands. When examining the wounds to her wrists, the pathologists explained they were inconsistent with self-inflicted ones. It's believed that Nikki was unconscious but still alive when those wounds were inflicted. Back at the flat, blood samples were recovered from the kitchen, bathroom and hallway, as well as from the front door handle. Each sample matched Nikki's DNA profile. Further bloodstains were found on 5 broken pieces of the casserole dish, one of which matched Nikki's profile. The other 4 samples, however, did not match Nikki, although they appeared to belong to the same person, the identity of whom the police did not yet know. Also in the hall of the flat was a bucket, inside of which was a tiny piece of flesh and a small knife. A letter was also found in Nikki's flat, the contents of which related to her informing her GP that she was living in fear due to being petrified of Kayla paying her an unexpected visit. The next logical place for detectives to look was at the footage captured by CCTV cameras inside the main building. As they did, they were taken aback at the sight of what appeared to be a man wearing a high-vis jacket and glasses who was sporting a rather bizarre-looking Van Dyke beard. The mystery man was seen entering the building a few minutes before 8:30 on the morning of May 23rd before leaving shortly before midday. That just so happened to correspond with the estimated time of Nikki's death according to the 2 pathologists who examined her body. The mystery person went straight to Nikki's door, by the way. Unsure where to turn, detectives brought Jodie and Leanne into the station and took them into separate rooms. When showed the CCTV footage, Leanne immediately relayed her concerns about the man in fact looking like a woman wearing a crude disguise. Jodie was unable to watch the footage in its entirety at first glance as she knew immediately the identity of the mystery man. According to her, it wasn't a man at all. It was a woman, Nikki's half-sister, Kayla. On May 25th, just a day removed from the discovery of Nikki's body, Kayla was arrested at her home and taken in for questioning. When shown the same CCTV footage as Jodie and Leanne, Kayla denied it was her. She insisted that the person in the video appeared to be bow-legged and was overweight. She said, "I might be fat, but I'm not bow-legged." Insisting the footage appeared to show a man as far as she were concerned, Kayla told the officers she knew because he, quote, looked like a dude. In the background, Kayla's mobile phone and laptop were being examined and revealed some telling results. As soon as Nikki's death had been announced, Kayla had begun searching for flights back to America. She even sent a message to her husband over there saying, "Pray for Nikki, as I will." Clearly a flight risk, the questioning officers were left with nothing more than circumstantial evidence, as Kayla also denied having owned a wig and fake beard. That all changed when the results of the forensic tests of the blood samples found on the casserole dish pieces came back. Having provided her DNA upon her arrival at the station, as is required by law for everyone arrested in the UK, it was shown to match 4 of the 5 samples on the broken casserole dish pieces. Kayla was formally charged with Nikki's murder on May 28th and appeared at Luton Crown Court 3 days later. When she was required to enter a plea that August, she went with not guilty, which was followed by a trial date being set for November. Despite a brief delay on November 14th, 2016, due to a strike by prison officers who staged a walkout, Kayla's trial officially began on that day at Luton Crown Court and was overseen by Mr. Justice Michael Kerr. Case prosecutor John Price opened the proceedings by explaining to the jury what had happened to Nikki at the hands of her half-sister. Insisting the wounds to Nikki's wrists were superficial and served no other purpose than to act as a cover-up for her murderer, Mr. Price showed the jury the CCTV footage of the mystery person whom he claimed was Kayla in disguise. He then said the following. At first sight, the visible facial hair would suggest to the viewer that this is a man. That person went directly to the door of this particular flat and used the letterbox to knock on the door more than once. The person waited for quite a while before the door was opened. It's somebody quite short in stature, of slight build, but even though it's late May, that person was wearing gloves. The person had reddish hair, a similarly coloured goatee or Van Dyke beard, and was wearing heavy frame spectacles. These images show very obviously that the hair and the beard are fake, so this person is not necessarily a man. And if the hair and beard are fake, so too might be the spectacles, in that the person doesn't need them. Mr. Price went on to tell the jury that Nikki was the only person in the flat at the time, and that her killer, Kayla, had spent up to 3 hours tinkering with the crime scene so that it looked like Nikki had taken her own life. Regarding the disguise Kayla donned, a couple of witnesses from the Harlequin Costume Hire Shop in Baldock had previously revealed that Kayla visited the shop in April 2016 inquiring about costumes. She supposedly informed them that they were for her and a man, and although the two witnesses couldn't recall the precise date of her visit, telephone evidence indicated it was April 22nd. Susan Jones and Richard Rosendale, the witnesses, then picked Kayla out from an identity parade on August 25th. Mr. Price said, "This is obviously a false beard and wig, so the disguise's purpose may not have been to deceive Nikki, but to try to conceal the intruder's identity from the cameras. That would indicate prior knowledge of a CCTV system." Kayla had obviously become accustomed to the presence and location of CCTV cameras during the few months she lived at the flat with Nikki. On December 8th, Kayla took the stand and denied any involvement in Nikki's death. Asked if the mystery CCTV figure was her, she said, "Course it ain't me. Why would you think it's me?" Despite the defence team insisting it was a case involving nothing more than circumstantial evidence, the jury of 6 men and 5 women, I assume one jury member was removed for some reason, returned to the court with their verdict after deliberating for 7 hours. They unanimously found Kayla guilty of Nikki's murder. Mr. Justice Kerr handed Kayla a life sentence with a minimum term of 20 years on December 21st, 2016, but it was sadly not a moment that Rena, Nikki's mum, could experience. She unfortunately passed away before her daughter's killer was brought to justice. And that was the story of the murder of Nikki Collingbourne. Thanks again, Sarah, for requesting it. I'd love to hear everyone's thoughts. This week's new reviews are as follows. Meg left a 5-star review on BritishMurders.com. It reads, "Found this podcast a couple of months ago and have been listening to it non-stop ever since. I have long days as a tattoo apprentice and your podcasts keep me company and make my days go so much quicker. Just became a Patreon member and can't wait for more." Sammy left a 5-star review on BritishMurders.com. It reads, "Hello, I found your podcast by chance, but I have listened to all your episodes now and wait not so patiently for each week's new episode. Love, love, love. I know you tend to do lesser known cases. However, as someone who works in healthcare, I was wondering if you would consider the newish case of Lucy Letby. I'm also from Hereford and find this a heartbreaking but interesting case. Everyone seems very torn about it. Thank you." Right. It's on my list, Sammy, and you're the 4th person to request that case, but I'm unsure about it. Given the child victims and their families have been granted anonymity orders, I'd realistically only be able to discuss Letby for the duration of that episode, and I'm loath to give her any more airtime than she's already gotten. Never say never, though. Finally, Katrin Hughes left a 5-star review on BritishMurders.com. It reads, "Found this podcast a couple of weeks ago and can't stop listening. Loved the guest interview with Her Honor Wendy Joseph QC, so interesting. And her book is now in my TBR pile along with Shea Doyle and Stephen Keogh's. The amount of research is evident, stays respectful to all involved, and I especially like the tangents you go off on. Very easy to listen to. Great work. Thank you." Thank you for that, Meg, Sammy and Katrin. I really appreciate you leaving those reviews. If anyone listening would like to leave a review of the show and have it read on a future episode, just head to iTunes, Facebook, Podchaser or BritishMurders.com and you can leave one there. You can also leave a star rating for the show on Spotify, that would be greatly appreciated. Please consider heading to patreon.com/BritishMurders and signing up for either my OBE or CBE tier. By doing so, you'll gain early and ad-free access to all future episodes. You'll get access to several bonus episodes, regular giveaways, some welcome goodies, and my weekly British Murders Journal series. Or, if you'd prefer, you can support the show on a one-off basis. Just head to buymeacoffee.com/BritishMurders. You can send case suggestions to contact@BritishMurders.com or message me via social media, although I'm a bit poor at getting back to the old messaging, I won't lie. You'll not only get the episode covered, but when you do, you'll get a cheeky shout out just like Sarah did. And that does us for another episode. I've been Stuart Blues, this has been British Murders. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time. Cheerio.